What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Mario Rosenstock in for Matt Cooper on The Last Word, and it's time for one of my favourite items on The Last Word. It's The Last Word on the environment. Delighted to be joined live in studio by John Gibbons. Hi, John.
Hi, Mario.
I'm just going to read the menu of what we've got lined up today, all right?
Sure.
15 minutes, which is plenty of time. Life or death for cities should Earth warm 3 degrees centigrade. Climate change triggered a mega tsunami that caused the Earth to vibrate for 9 days. Norway, electric cars outnumber petrol for first time in historic milestone. And why does the UK's biggest carbon emitter receive billions in green subsidies? Well, I mean, obviously my attention is drawn to the top line there, John. Life or death for cities should Earth warm 3 degrees centigrade. And this brings me back to when you were on my podcast and you would have discussed stuff with me and you would have said that if, places like mainland Pakistan and parts of India and this Indian subcontinent heat, it becomes impossible for human beings to actually live, even in the shade.
That's right. Yeah, we're very close already to the outer thresholds of human endurance. Not just humans, but mammals, basically. So we're getting super close to that. We've seen it over the last 2 to 3 years. We had it in 2022. We've had it in spots again in 2024. What's called the wet bulb temperature. This is basically where you encounter high temperatures with 100% humidity, and above about 28 to 30 degrees centigrade, they become fatal for mammals. So that's kind of where we don't want to go. But we're getting super, super close to that. And I suppose in a way, Mario, it's not that surprising because we're stoking the furnace, right? Every year, if we sat down a year ago to have this conversation and you asked me what's changed, you know, in the last 12 months, I'd say the simplest thing is we've added another 50,000 million tons of long-acting, powerful heat-trapping gases into effectively a closed system, which is our global atmosphere. So basically, it's like we're stoking up the furnace, we're putting more and more fuel in, and things are heating up. Now, we're seeing that play out, of course, in different ways. Like, for example, right now across Europe, we're experiencing, in Poland is experiencing its worst flooding events in 100 years. Across Czechia, Austria, Romania, the worst flooding in 3 to 4 decades. Meanwhile, across in Portugal, they've declared a state of calamity with the worst wildfires in living memory. So that's what happens when you pour all this additional energy into, as I say, what is essentially a closed system. So I suppose the item that we're looking at here, in specifically in relation to cities, this is a piece of work done by the World Resources Institute. They examined 1,000 cities, and we know already, Mario, that cities are hotter than the surrounding countryside. Now, anyone who moves from the city to the countryside or vice versa will know that in the countryside, it's cooler because you've got vegetation, you've got shade and so on. In the city, for example, you've got asphalt, you've got concrete. And what that tends to do is it reflects the heat. So cities create what is called the urban heat island effect, which means that cities, especially city areas that have little vegetation, get extremely warm. And they can get, so essentially cities become a sort of like pressure cookers. That's the best way I can put it. Now, what the Institute found is that basically at the moment, these 1,000 cities that they studied, they are home to about 2 billion people, roughly. And what they're saying is that at 1.5 degrees centigrade of a temperature increase, we're looking at 24 days, I think it is, of heat waves per annum to be expected in these cities. Now, that increases pretty much exponentially as you move towards 3 degrees centigrade. Now, the Paris Climate Agreement that all countries, including Ireland, signed up to in 2015, at the moment, if every country in the world, including Ireland, met all our Paris commitments, which we're not, we would hit about 2.9 degrees centigrade. So we're heading directly for the upper limit as described in this study. So in simple terms, what we're looking at really is the uninhabitability of many cities. And the issue really, of course, cities are livable for people because of air conditioning. That's the key thing. So we know that as the temperature goes up, people crank up the air conditioning. That is the normal reaction. The problem, of course, is air conditioning is extremely energy intensive, which, of course, if your grid has been powered by fossil fuels, you're essentially, you know, you're heating the furnace up further. And secondly, a huge threat is in, for, I'll give an example, a city like Phoenix, Arizona. They had this summer, I think it was 100 consecutive days over 100 degrees centigrade. Right? Never happened before. Now, 100 degrees centigrade in our money, I think it's about 38 degrees, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, it's about 38 degrees centigrade. So they've had this heat. Now, people survive in Phoenix, Arizona. It is in the desert. They survive there because they can afford air conditioning. But they have a fairly creaky grid in many parts of the US. If that grid goes down, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people will die. Mm. In a sort of the heat equivalent of the type of disaster that we saw in New Orleans in 2005, where we had a hurricane and a flooding disaster. So if you can imagine a city like that, where people are essentially trapped in extreme heat, no way out, that's the danger. So this study basically is saying, you know, put it in simple terms, temperatures above 1.5 degrees are extremely dangerous. Now, by the way, just in case listeners are wondering where we are now, technically we're at about plus 1.2, but in reality, the last 13 months globally, have tracked at about 1.5, 1.6. Now, we're hoping this is a temporary anomaly and that global temperatures haven't actually set at that level. So we're technically still at about 1.2, but we're getting super close already to what the Paris Agreement said is a dangerous threshold for climate change, which is 1.5. Why is it dangerous? Bad things happen at plus 1.5. For example, the Greenland ice sheet becomes committed to irreversible melt. That's bad news because the Greenland ice sheet contains about 7 meters of sea level rise. So we would like the Greenland ice sheet to stay intact and on remaining on land. We don't want the Greenland ice sheet to end up in the North Atlantic. So this is the reason why these numbers, and I think it's really important, Mario, to stress this. These are not political numbers. These are physical limits. These are sort of, you know, places beyond which we cannot go.
I pick a number, right? 10 years. If 10 years ago I sat in front of you and I said, what are the figures now? And these will be the figures in 10 years' time in 2024. Would you have regarded this as catastrophic news?
Where we are today, if you'd asked me, and I know this because I was on this beat 10 years ago, at 10 years ago, we were at about 0.8 above.
And if I had told you that it would have been 1.2 or 3...
Well, in fact, if you'd said, okay, at that I'd have said, yeah, we're probably tracking there. But if you'd said to me that we've just had 13 months at 1.6, I'd have said, you've lost your marbles, Mario. That couldn't happen.
You wouldn't have believed it for 2024.
It was impossible in the 2020s.
So it's outstripped.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's moving ahead, yeah. And in a sense, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that we are surprised. But certainly things are, in every sense of the word, Mario, they're heating up and they're heating up fast. Mm. Now, I appreciate we've just had a cool summer in Ireland, so that creates a kind of a cognitive dissonance here locally where people say, I'm not sure about all this heating up, but really what we need to keep an eye on is the global thermometer. And of course, the great threat to humans is probably best described not even as global warming, but as global weirding. That's where basically the weather systems go crazy.
But I also think that global warming and climate change, as I think you've referred to before, could actually mean that Ireland ends up cooler because of the North Atlantic.
That's right. We're in the curious situation here that we sit, our relatively mild temperatures, given how far north we are in Ireland, as I'm sure most people know, is because, I'll simplify this, and we call it the Gulf Stream, which basically means we get a huge energy subsidy from the tropics that is carried through warm water currents that warms up northwestern Europe, and that means that Ireland is several degrees warmer than it should be. Obviously, if the Gulf Stream shuts down, a number of bad things happen. Number one, our average temperatures in Ireland drop by somewhere between 5 and 10 degrees, which is really bad news. That basically makes us a climate similar to maybe Iceland or parts of Greenland. So that's really bad news. And secondly, we could also be looking at superstorm events in the North Atlantic, through which no humans have ever lived, for all kinds of reasons that we could literally go all the way to 6 o'clock to explain the mechanics of these. But essentially, again, the key thing is the kind of climate system that we evolved in over the last, 10,000 years, our civilizations, they're really finely tuned to human activities. And anything outside of that, either up or down, is really bad news because we're just not set for it.
Okay, as you said, we could go on until 6 just about that alone. But I'm interested in this one, the mega tsunami that caused the Earth to vibrate for 9 days. briefly explain what that was and what happened?
Sure, yeah. This was a riddle, Mario, that 68 researchers from 40 institutions were trying to figure out. Essentially, they detected these seismic waves and they were recorded for a 9-day continuous period. And they're going, what the heck is going on? So they sort of set out on the scientific equivalent of a treasure hunt to try and figure this out. So they eventually traced it back to a gigantic landslide in a remote part of Greenland. So essentially, a chunk of a mountain containing, I have it here, 25 million tons of rock crashed into a fjord. And it was sort of, if you can imagine it, this is a gigantic bathtub. So 25 million tons of rubble smashed into the bathtub. And essentially, this vast tsunami of water sloshed up the fjord. And back down, the fjord. And
you're demonstrating it.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit visual for radio here. And it sloshed backwards and forwards like water in a bathtub for 9 days. And the signal, that the disturbance was so great that the seismic signals were picked up in Antarctica, right? So it just gives an indication. And what's the climate connection? Of course, the reason why it happened in the first place is a rapid melt in eastern Antarctica. I mean, the rate of melt in Antarctica, just to give your listeners a sense of it, every hour. Right, so this show runs for 2.5 hours. So in the 2.5 hours of today's show, we lose about 75 million tons of ice will melt from Antarctica and drop into the North Atlantic in the length of time of the show today, right? That's happening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So that process is very much ongoing. And really, so this was one of those curious little stories, Mario, where it just gives you a sense that these are literally seismic events that are unfolding. Mm. And again, things we probably should keep an eye on.
We only have 2 minutes left for the last two things, so I'm going to skip them. And I want to ask you something that I've asked you before on my podcast, but perhaps you haven't been asked much on this program. And that is, you know, you're a very enthusiastic person and you're a very committed person. Do you ever reach any areas where you go, I'm feeling depressed by this, I'm feeling beaten down by this, I'm hopelessly adrift with worry about this?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, of course. I think everybody, and climate scientists have been surveyed in this, for example, so it's not just humble reporters. Anyone who's at the coalface in this will have moments of great darkness because we're looking into the abyss to some extent. Having said that, the thing that keeps me going, the thing that gets me bouncing in here every Thursday, and the thing that keeps me writing, the thing that keeps me reporting and interviewing, is because we've got to do something. The alternative, Mario, is to be fatalistic, lean back in my chair and say, "'Tis all over, 'tis all done for, we're done for." You can't be like that. If your basement was on fire, you wouldn't be up in the bedroom saying, "'Tis too late, sure, I'm just going to read the paper here." You'd get off your ass and you get down and you tackle the fire. And that's what folks like me are trying to do. So, yeah, I know I come in here, I'm a bit of a broken record trying to talk about these things to raise awareness, but I'm hoping that there are people out. In fact, let me rephrase that. I know there are people out there listen to us today who are going, oh my God, I need to know more about this. I need to get involved. I need to do my bit. And yes, we have the begrudgers. Yes, we have the curmudgeons. They will always be with us, Mario. But there are lots of people on the right side of this who are trying to do their best. Lots of scientists doing fantastic work in difficult conditions. And really, the only choice, as I see it, morally or otherwise, is to stay plugging away and hope that we get lucky.
All right, John. Well, you keep plugging away. And thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with me today.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.